Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, in British Columbia, the Blue Jay Lake Farm welcomes newcomers to rural life and at the same time helps address the local housing shortage.
I seem to be good at attracting nice people. The relationship's different for every person that's here. Some live in their own tiny homes and some come as woofers and just work in exchange for room and board.
Minimum wage is not enough to live decently in New Brunswick. Anti-poverty activists call for a living wage of $20 an hour.
I have worked in the past where making minimum wage, I had to work 5 days a week to make $300. And obviously, that's just not enough.
On Cortes Island, the Community Health Association found its new teen zine coordinator.
I know sometimes life can get stagnant and boring when you don't have so much hustle and bustle like the cities. So I want to try to create a space for kids to come, share laughs, have fun, get kids together in a healthy way and be able to, have fun while doing it.
And a dying theater comes back to life in Quebec's Pontiac region. Who would have guessed? The Pontiac Warden just couldn't let it go.
Since coming to the Pontiac, I am committed to revitalization of the Pontiac as a business person and also as the warden. We have a lot of infrastructure that's closed. And the easiest thing is to reopen it.
Welcome to Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI and get all our stories on canada-info.ca.
So the Blue Jay Lake Farm has been welcoming newcomers to Cortes Island for more than 30 years. The farm seeks workers through the International Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farm program, previously known as Willing Workers on Organic Farms. So far, up to 25 woofers per year spend time on the farm. Henry and Margaret Verscher own that farm. Henry says, with Cortes Island's severe housing shortage, Blue Jay Lake Farm's welcome to newcomers not only addresses labor needs on the farm, but also helps people find both short-term and long-term housing. He says those who've stayed over the years have taken up residency and help enrich Cortes Island's unique community fabric. Henry estimates that 36 people have adopted the island after first spending time on the farm. Henry Verscher spoke to our journalist Craig Osoba. He describes the community and what keeps it together.
It's a 300-acre farm. We have beef animals. We have about 400 apple trees, a couple hundred chickens. Sam and Ann do a lot of vegetables. We do some vegetables. And then we farm for fun, too. We have goats and milk cows for the farm residents as well.
And what is the arrangement for people who come to stay and help out at the farm?
Well, it's interesting. Max said, this place is like a circus and you're the circus ringmaster. And I thought about that and I said, no, actually not. I think you guys are the ringmasters and I'm the promoter. And I seem to be good at attracting nice people. And the relationship's different for every person that's here. Some live in their own tiny homes. Some two couples rent from us, and some come as woofers and just work in exchange for room and board. And then we have various accommodations. We have mostly little cabins, but some tent, some like living up in the hayloft. There's just all different for everybody.
And at any given time, how many people are helping out and living on the property?
Well, there's quite a few independents that have their own lives and their own gardens. So there's maybe 10 of those. And then there's usually 6 or 8 woofers as well. A lot less during pandemic because, of course, they weren't moving around. So the ones we had stayed and not new ones were coming. So.
And out of that, Henry, the people that you have do seek out to help out, how do you go about finding them?
Well, everybody comes as a woofer. Almost everybody. Sam and Ann with Big Fur Farm are probably the exceptions. But generally, if people want to join the community, they come. I'm woofing for 6 months a year, and then if we seem to get along, then it graduates onto them building their own tiny house, often on the farm, and that's very flexible.
And during your tenure, actually, how long have you been involved with the farm or been its proprietor, Henry?
We bought the farm in 1990, so I guess I've lived half my life here. It's a very big privilege to have spent half my life in such a beautiful place.
And during that time, roughly how many folks have come and gone, do you think, during that period?
Well, as far as woofers, I'm sure we've had at least 1,000 woofers over that time. we probably get, you know, 25 a year usually. Some, the last couple of years we've just had long-termers, so it hasn't been like that, but often people come for a few weeks and it's my way of traveling. I get to see the world through woofer eyes.
And do you think, like during that time, how many of those, well, up to 1,000 have actually stayed on and become full-time Cortez Islanders?
Yeah, quite a few actually. I would think maybe 36-ish people that live on Cortez have lived at Blue Jay at some point in their, usually when they first arrived.
So it serves as a real kind of gateway, welcome, and initiation to farm life itself.
Yeah, yeah. If we don't think they fit Cortez, we send them off. No, I'm kidding. But I think it's brought a real nice family. A lot of them are families now. They have young kids and stuff. So it's brought a nice, I think, a nice ambiance to Cortez.
And just finally, Henry, what do you think the key is to the sustainability of Blue Jay Lake Farm?
That's a really good question. The land, of course, is very sustainable all on its own, and way before I was ever here, of course. Yeah, it's my passion, I guess, and attracting people with similar passions and being able to have a symbiotic relationship, I guess. In a way, it's easy because we don't have very many meetings and stuff. It's, yeah, we all seem to just get along and it works easy.
I'm just wondering too, Henry, is there any sort of key foundational values or mindsets that you're sort of looking for from people who might be interested in spending time here?
Yeah, a passion for the environment and a passion for sustainability and growing your own food without too many big inputs and stuff. And that's, and I think that's maybe why the community works easily too, because people that don't fit very well, don't share those passions, don't stay, and they don't get kicked off. We haven't ever kicked anybody off, so it's been very easy that way too.
Self-regulating.
Yeah.
Abby Tate is a new arrival to Blue Jay Lake Farm.
I looked up on the woofing site and I found Blue Jay Farm, and Erin, the other woofer, contacted me too, and we just talked, and I was really interested in finding out this place. I wanted to discover what it was like, and I haven't really had much to do with the farm. I grew up on an intentional community, and this kind of fit.
Is this your first time to Canada?
I'm half Canadian, so my dad's Canadian. Yeah, I was here like 5 years ago.
On Cortez or?
No.
Okay.
Sunshine Coast.
Okay. Yeah. But it's your first time to Cortez Island.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. How's it going so far?
Well, I've only been here for one day, not even. So, I love it. Yeah, I do. And I think I am going to love, I love the people, and they're so happy and positive, and yeah, Henry's lovely, and yeah, animals, goats.
And just one final question, Abby, is that what draws you to farming and in community?
I think because I grew up on a community, it's kind of always in my life.
Blue Jay Lake Farm also operates a sawmill on the property, providing lumber to Cortez Islanders, along with vegetable, fruits, and livestock. Greg Osoba, Cortez Island.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
The minimum wage in New Brunswick went up by $1 in April of 2022 to reach $12.75 per hour. Another increase is slated for October, when the minimum wage will reach $13.75. Before the recent boost, New Brunswick had the lowest minimum wage of any province or territory in Canada. Saskatchewan now holds that dubious distinction. By October, New Brunswick is slated to have the highest minimum wage in the Atlantic region, against $13.70 per hour in PEI, $13.35 in Nova Scotia, and $13.20 in Newfoundland and Labrador. That's according to the Retail Council of Canada. But this year's heftier raise still falls short of what anti-poverty activists are calling a living wage. That amount would be close to $20 per hour in New Brunswick cities, according to calculations by the St. John-based Human Development Council. Anti-poverty campaigner Abraham Lutz and smaller business owner Madison Bragg spoke with our Sackville journalist David Gordon Kosh about the recent minimum wage increase and standard of living in New Brunswick.
Madison Bragg is the owner of Bragg's Cleaning, a small cleaning business that services the Tantramar area. She says her employees start at $15 per hour and she believes it's unacceptable to pay any less.
You know, I've worked in the past where making minimum wage, I had to work 5 days a week to make $300. And obviously, that's just not enough when you're working the majority of your week. And I have heard a lot of arguments being on the other side. Well, if we had to pay $15 an hour, we would have to close our doors. But I think that's a pretty close-minded solution. I don't think it's as black and white as that. Although, like I said, I feel empathy for the businesses that will be affected. I do think there are solutions out there because I seem to be able to do it.
Abram Lutz is the provincial coordinator for the New Brunswick Common Front for Social Justice. He says $13.75 per hour isn't nearly enough to meet the day-to-day expenses of low-income workers.
This creates a lot of people who are in, unfortunately, fairly desperate conditions. And, you know, you have entities like payday lenders and things like that sort of prey on the fact that people are short on cash, which in the long run only sort of perpetuates the cycle of poverty.
Do you think the minimum wage should meet the living wage?
Absolutely. Absolutely, it should.
The provincial government's minimum wage policy has also attracted criticism from business groups. Louis-Philippe Gauthier is Senior Director of Legislative Affairs Atlantic for the CFIB.
There's very high pressures on fuel costs. There's pressures on insurance costs. There's pressures on across the supply chain. And, of course, there's pressures on wages.
He called the minimum wage a blunt instrument for poverty reduction. The CFIB has argued many minimum wage earners are teenagers who live with their parents and don't rely on their wages to survive. But data from the government of New Brunswick indicates 64% of the roughly 45,000 people affected by the increase are more than 19 years old, and more than half of the people affected are women. With criticism from anti-poverty groups on the left and business organizations like the CFIB on the right, the Higgs government seems to walk a thin line politically with its minimum wage policy.
That was David Gordon Kosh. So we now go back to Cortes Island, where the Cortes Community Health Association has been looking for quite a while for a new teen zine coordinator, someone passionate about investing in the lives of teenagers on Cortes Island off the BC coast. Well, after a few months, the association has found the perfect candidate. Her name is Kim Lotnick, and she's very excited about the plans she has for the remainder of the year for this teen program. Kim seems to know what teens like. She has already organized and hosted a teen pizza and movie night with several teens joining in for the event. Upcoming is a two-night kayak trip. The Teen Zine Initiative has been offering programming to local Cortes Island youth for the past 14 years. Kate Madigan spoke with Kim Lotnick.
I was really excited for this opportunity to get to know some of the kids on Cortes a little bit better. So yeah, we've had one movie night that was kind of just like my introduction to the kids, their introduction to me, and that went really well. But I do kind of want to branch out and see if there's any other activities that we can try to do with these teens, just because, I don't know, Cortes Island is just such an amazing opportunity to get outside, get into nature, to find things to do that are just healthy things to do for kids. I know sometimes life can get stagnant and boring when you don't have so much hustle and bustle like the cities. So I want to try to create a space for kids to come, hang out, share laughs, have fun, and just create some sort of community for them within their age group. So that's kind of the main goal, is just to get kids together in a healthy way and be able to, yeah, have fun while doing it.
What were the ages that you got for your movie night? That might have given you an idea of what to expect for future events, I suppose. Who was showing up?
I mean, honestly, they were all the range from 13 to 17. That's what we allow in. But yeah, we had kind of the whole spectrum from 13 to around 17 years old. So there was a couple of younger ones, which is, I guess, the 13-year-olds. And then you could see there was a couple of older ones, which would have been like 15, 16, 17 type thing. So that was nice to just kind of get a broad spectrum of kids to come in and hang out.
Is it a challenge to get kind of enough kids out to these events to make them fun enough? How many teens are you getting?
I mean, to be fair, I've only done the one so far personally. So the last time I think we had about like around 8 to 10 kids, which was, I thought was an awesome show up. I mean, the more the merrier. We'll always take more kids to hang out. But I mean, the events that we plan are definitely designed for, I mean, any number of kids to show up. If a couple kids show up, it would still be awesome and fun. We would still make it a good time. But yeah, I always think the more the merrier, and just it gives kids opportunity to meet other kids like themselves or to learn from other kids.
Right. And you've kind of touched on this already, but why do you think it is important, teen scene, for our youth on Cortez Island?
I just think it's important for them to understand that they have friends within the community. I know that, I mean, when I first moved here, I had a hard time making connections and making different friends. So it can feel quite isolating at times. And I just think it's really important to show these teens that they have kids in their community that they can be friends with, and even having maybe like an older mentor, like just to be around them and to know that they know older kids in the community, younger kids. I just think it's a good way of just feeling connection and love within the community.
Tell me what you got planned for the next few months.
So for April, I kind of tapped on this when we were at the movie night and to see if any of the kids would like it. And a lot of them seemed interested. So I'm still hoping that that momentum is still going. But we're going to be doing a bocce ball tournament. I really wanted to incorporate something outside and games that kids can play in the summertime. So if they decide they like bocce ball, they can take a set out and hang out with their friends and play bocce ball at the beach. So we're doing that. We're going to do kind of a test run, just show everyone the rules and let them know kind of what the boundaries are for the tournament. We're going to be doing this at Smelt Bay, just at the big field at the bottom of the hill there at the last parking lot. And we'll have prizes, and it'll just be a fun opportunity for kids to get together, have some team atmosphere, because we'll be doing groups of two or three per bocce ball set, you know?
Okay.
So yeah, we'll have a little bit of like a team atmosphere. They can cheer each other on, which I think is really fun. That was always something I liked when I was younger, is to go to different events and cheer people on and cheer your friends on, whether you're winning or losing. It doesn't really matter. It's just kind of about bringing the atmosphere of a little bit of competitiveness and a little bit of fun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So you got the bocce ball tournament. What else have you got coming up?
After that, we're going to do matched up again with Cortez Kayaks with the lovely lady Kai, who's going to be helping us organize a kayak trip for the kids. So this night is going to be a 2-night kayak trip, which is going to be so fun.
No kidding.
Just to get to know our surroundings, the islands around us, learn about some water safety and how to, I mean, properly enter and exit your kayaks. I know a lot of the kids on the island, they may or may not have access to kayaks. So it's still good for them to be able to know all the different safety that goes along with it, how the ocean works, because we're going to be ocean kayaking. So it's kind of a different realm than if you're just on the lake. So we're lucky to have Kai and her team there to just teach us some safety and yeah, explore the islands that I don't really know all of them yet. And I'm just happy to go exploring with them. I think it'll be so much fun.
That's so great. And is there any other events you want to tell us about?
Well, so far, that's all we have planned. I'm happy to take suggestions from any of the kids, because as of right now, I'm still getting to know them. So I'm used to working with kind of kids from the city, which since moving here, I haven't noticed a huge drastic change in how they're like, but there is differences for sure. So yeah, I'm just kind of working at getting to know the kids and seeing what they're going to be into. So if any of them have suggestions, I have opened up an Instagram page for them to get in contact with me. There's email too, Instagram, email, whatever works for them. As soon as I get the flyers, I'm going to be sending out emails about Teen Scene. I'll also be putting it on the Tidelines as well and on Facebook.
That's great.
So okay. You guys will be able to see it somewhere. That's for sure. You'll be able to find it somewhere online. And yeah, I'm hoping word of mouth helps too, is just to get the the teens talking about it and hopefully telling their friends to come and hang out with them.
Kim, thank you so much for all this information. And I hope you have a really great year with Teen Scene. Great rest of the year.
Thank you so much.
In Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
Pontiac Warden Jane Toller recently held a small press conference to announce that she has purchased the Cinéma Lynn, located in downtown Fort Coulonges in the province of Quebec. The old theater hasn't been used since 2013. The venue was owned by the Doyle family for years and is named after the former owner's daughter. The Pontiac Warden has been working on this project for more than a year and a half. Once the facility is renovated, Toller hopes to show films both in English and French, as well as live theater productions. She plans on using 100 seats. Fort Coulonges Mayor Christine Francoeur said that she was very pleased the local venue would be reopening and jokingly advised Toller that she should use the same popcorn recipe as the Doyles did. Jane Toller owns two other businesses in town, the clothing store Depot de Fort Coulonges and the Spruce Home Inn, which features a restaurant, conference center, and bed and breakfast. She emphasized that the latest purchase was a personal investment and no grant funding had been used. Our journalist Caleb Niggerson caught up with her.
And so how long has this project been in the works? How long have you been working on this?
For about a year and a half, yes. Been working with the present owner, Barry Doyle, had the responsibility of this theater since it has, you know, while it was last open and when it closed. And so we have, I'm sure he'll still be very involved. He's very interested in, you know, the new direction that the theater will take.
Do you have any idea how long it's been closed here?
2013, I think. I think 2013. I think it was actually around the same time that the Red Bridge closed. Yeah, just, and so the Red Bridge has opened, and so, you know, this, I think what I'd like to say is that since coming to the Pontiac, I am committed to revitalization of the Pontiac as a business person and also as the warden. And we have a lot of infrastructure that's closed, and the easiest thing is to reopen it.
So this makes what? How many businesses do you have in town now? We got the conference center, the restaurant, the depot.
I consider Spruce Home Inn one business. I have a clothing store, and the theater will be the third.
Third?
Yes. But fortunately, I believe I have the energy. And if all goes well, I'll be turning this over to some very capable people. I'll just be here eating popcorn and watching movies.
And do you have an estimate on roughly how much it's going to take to renovate this place? It hasn't been opened in almost 10 years now.
I was very fortunate to be able to, in fact, I'm headed there right now. I have a good friend, and he happens to own the Renfrew Theater. His name's Murray Adolph, and he has owned many theaters, and he has always been successful with his theaters. And he warned me. He said, this is not an easy time to be opening a movie theater, Jane. This is a big risk, but it's a risk I'm prepared to take, and because I'd rather see it open than closed. And I believe... Murray Adolph, what I wanted to say is Murray Adolph was the person who was able to secure secondhand digital equipment for me. Digital equipment is extremely expensive. And today, you cannot find 35 millimeter films to show. So the projector that's currently here cannot not be used anymore. And this was the daunting thing for me in the last year and a half, was wondering if I could afford the digital equipment. But fortunately, Murray Adolf, with all of his connections, found used digital equipment out in Prince George. And that is where it will be coming. It will arrive here on April 18th.
And do you know how many jobs you estimate this is going to create once it's up and running?
I will need someone to be up in the projection room, probably two people working shifts. I will need people in the candy bar, as they call it, or the snack bar. And I'm also thinking of employing some students in another fashion, which will be announced at the grand opening. I would like to begin some kind of young people's theater, which would take place on Saturday mornings. The plan is to have new releases, as well as some repertoire theater. I've been asked by a couple of people who know that I'm opening the theater to have the what are they called? Mad Tuesdays, the Cheap Tuesdays. you know, where it's $5, a very inexpensive ticket Tuesdays. Price. Yeah, yeah. And I also think, I mean, we now have the cafe downtown. You know, the SADC has moved in. Bohm Street is improving. And I think that this theater, the presence of this theater, is going to benefit and attract even more businesses on this street.
You had mentioned the digital equipment there, but is there anything else there you're prioritizing as far as renovations, like new seats, or what exactly do you need to
do? The outside appearance. The outside appearance, and I need to have the hydro reconnected, and I want to make sure that every single light bulb in the marquee is working.
The thought behind opening for 6 months there, is there a reason you chose the summer months?
Yes. The building is has a furnace in it, an oil furnace. I'd rather save on heating, and I would probably have to add more insulation. So really, we know in the Pontiac that our greatest population is during the months of May to October. Our seasonal residents, and we've got, you know, a population explosion going on right now as well. So I just feel that people are more in the mood, more likely to want to go to a film in those months. In the winter, there's many other distractions, and it might be just cozier to watch Netflix at home.
This ends this edition of Viewpoints, produced by the Local Journalism Initiative and presented by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in collaboration with campus and community radios across the country. You can listen to all our programs on canada-info.ca. Also, tune in to all the stories produced by dozens of journalists working across the country in British Columbia, Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and elsewhere on canada-info.ca. Their radio pieces are posted there on a daily basis. They allow us to discover Canada and our local communities from a different perspective. Thanks to our journalists today, Caleb Nickerson, David Gordon-Kosh, Craig Osoba, Kate Madigan, and their guest, and to Maureen McEwen, our national coordinator, and to the artists who, of course, help us out with their music. I'm Boris Chassaigne. Stay tuned to your local radio station. Thanks for being with us. Goodbye.
Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.